Baseball is back.
He doesn't want a super spreader out there in the middle of the field.
The season is different. On the field, in the socially distant clubhouse, in the empty stands.
You guys wanted to do it. You've been wanting to do it for months.
There's a lot to talk about.
Who are you kidding? Don't give me all that bull crap.
And this is the place to do it. This is the Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass.
Brought to you by Big Y, Safety Insurance, Rodenheiser Home Services, Woodbridge Wines, Gravely, Budweiser, and Jackson Lumber.
On Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Against Tanner Houck. What a moment for this young man.
Little sinker, sweeping slider. Been working on a split finger. See what he's got.
3-2, yes. And down he goes. That was 96 miles an hour. Quick inning to start his big league career. And he put him away right here. Did he commit? And he
did.
That is strike three. Anderson with half a dozen home runs. Ooh. Swung on and missed. Strike three. Tried to get him to go on that, and he did. 1-2. Boy, that had something on it. A swing and a miss for strike three. 2-2 on the way. Struck out again. That one ate him up. He fans for the second time. Out trying to end it right here. 3-2 pitch. And he struck him out.
There you go. That was the night for Tanner Houck, Red Sox prospect. And that's right. Typically, that term is an oxymoron. Red Sox prospect. Oxymoron, but not last night. Not against the Miami Marlins and not with the Red Sox winning 2-0, I think, was the final score for the Miami Marlins. But as we all know, the wins and losses at this stage, largely incidental. They mean nothing. It's all about the Red Sox being able to set themselves up for the future. That's what this year has been about from the beginning. That is what the Chaim Bloom era is about. And last night, Tanner Houck was the first guy this season, I think, that we have really looked at. Bobby Dalbec's another. I look at Dalbec differently than many of you do. So that's my fault. That's not yours. But in the last couple of weeks now, you've seen a couple of guys here. Dalbec came to the big league, started hitting some home runs. Now Tanner Houck gets to the mound. 5 scoreless innings, 7 strikeouts, 3 walks, and what was a good performance against the Miami Marlins. And for those of you who are Red Sox fans, we all know where this stands. Houck's performance, way more important than Bobby Dalbec. Way more. Because the Red Sox don't have any pitching. So here's what I want to know from Red Sox fans tonight. Do you look at a guy like Houck last night? And does this give you any more optimism about the future of Red Sox pitching in the organization, particularly under Chaim Bloom, because that is the number one concern here? And my response on this might surprise you. Okay, it may surprise you. And it's hard to put too much emphasis on one game when the Red Sox have played the number of games they have, and frankly, they have sucked all year long. There have been decidedly few bright spots, but last night was one of them. Okay, 617-779-0985. So I want to start with Houck. I want to tell you what I thought of the performance last night, and then more importantly, I want to get to the bigger picture as it pertains to Chaim Bloom, the Red Sox, and their ability to develop pitching. Develop pitching, not draft pitching, develop it, which I think is now a critical thing in this organization. I'll explain why here in a minute. But again, 617-779-0985. Baseball, I'd say baseball has been on the back burner, but it's been less than that, which means the phone lines are open. So if you want to talk baseball, now's a good time to do it. We will not have a program tomorrow night. We didn't have one last night because of the Celtics. So if you're interested in the Red Sox, this is your hour to call. Okay, again, 617-779-0985. With regard to Tanner Houck, he was a first-round selection in the 2017 draft. You haven't heard a lot about him in the minors because, frankly, I think the Red Sox have completely screwed up his development. So Jimmy Stewart, you mentioned this yesterday, or maybe it was the day before when we had Jared Carabas on the show, and you said, you know why we haven't heard from Houck? Tell people again, why haven't we heard from Tanner Houck?
Because he was drafted under the impression that they were going to change how he was going to pitch, and then he went through the minor league system, and they changed how he was going to pitch. And you know what happened? When he went back to the way that he pitched, when he was a first-round draft pick coming out of college, he saw some success, and that's what he did last night.
Okay, so again, Houck was the 24th pick in the first round. Red Sox took him out of Missouri. At Missouri, Houck's a big right-hander. He's a good-sized kid. I don't know if one of you guys could tell me if you can find quickly. It's H-O-U-C-K, just how big he is. I want to say he's about 6'3". I mean, he's a good-sized kid.
6'5".
Okay, so he's even bigger than that. And I think that's important because typically you want guys who are built big and they're durable.
Pitching from their ass and legs, right?
Exactly. And this kid to me reeks of durability, which again, I think is important, Murray. Because it's all about being able to give innings and get outs, right? You can give 200 innings. There's tremendous value in that in Major League Baseball. So Houck was the 24th pick. As Jimmy said, in college, Houck was a power sinker guy with a great slider. And pitchers generally fall into certain categories. There's a power right-hander. There's a sinker slider guy. Sometimes you get a mix of both. And I would say that Houck is a little bit like, you know, I'm making loose connections here, Murray, but he's a little like Rick Porcello. Okay, so this is not an ace of the staff that we're talking about. But he throws a little harder than Porcello. He's got great movement on a sinker. And this is what he was coming out of college.
I mean, Porcello did win a Cy Young, though.
Okay, the Red Sox Porcello was also a very high draft pick.
Yeah.
Okay, the Red Sox drafted Houck thinking, well, when he's a sinker ball in college, we're going to change him. We're going to make him a four-seam strikeout guy. And Houck was a disaster early on in his development. And then, as Jimmy said, they switched back. And now they have him pitching to the way he pitched in college again. And I would say overall, it looks like he's back on a developmental path. Now, what is he in the long term? I don't know, but I'll tell you what. Based on what I saw last night, he's got the stuff to be a big league pitcher. There's no question in my mind about that. This is not a front of the rotation guy we're talking about. He's not throwing 98 painting corners with killer off speed stuff. He's not that. But he has great movement on his fastball. When he wants to go up in the strike zone with some velocity, he can do that a little bit. He has a killer slider. What he does not have is a third pitch, which we'll get to a little bit later in the show. But first, I want your impressions of Tanner Houck if you watched it last night. I know many of you did not. But secondly, this really speaks to the organization overall and their ability to draft and, more importantly, develop pitching. And it's that second part that's important because it relates to Houck. They drafted Houck in the first round, and they immediately screwed up his development. Immediately. He hadn't even gotten into the organization yet or on the field yet, and they were already planning to change him. Now they've gone back to accept him for what he is, and they are trying to develop what he has. That may be the difference under Chaim Bloom. And I have some interesting comments I want to read you from a story Alex Speer wrote in The Globe that relates to this very topic. But first, we'll take a couple of your calls. Again, 617-779-0985. Our buddy Tom's in Quincy. Tom, what do you got?
Hey, what's up, guys? Hey, Tony, I was overall, you know, I was impressed with the kid. I mean, they got five innings out of him on his debut, which was fine. He walked a few guys, which is, that's going to happen. My thing, why do they pick, the offense picks last night not to hit behind the kid? You know, it's like the kid's going out there, major league debut, gives up two runs. I was scared to death because you're leaving to the bullpen with only a two-run lead. But I think that the offense, well, they left, like, guys on base, like, in the teens.
So,
you know, there's too many guys leaving, being left on base when you have a kid making his major league debut and pitching very well. That could have went sour very fast once he left that game.
Okay, so, Tom, here's what I would tell you. In retrospect, it's better that they didn't get him runs. You get a better read on him that way. In the fourth inning of a 0-0 game, he walked a couple of guys, had to get out of it, and you know what he did? He powered his way out and struck out the final batter. And the guy that he struck out is hitting .361, I think, for the Marlins. So honestly, I think it worked out better that way. I don't care about the wins. I don't care about the runs that they get him. I don't care about that. I want to see whether the kid can pitch. That, to me, was the goal now. And this is what I told you. I hope that we would see some of this by the end of this year. I hope that we would see Jaron Duran. I hope that we would see Jay Groom. And we're not going to see all these guys. But last night we got Houck. And this, to me, this is more interesting than anything that's happened with the Red Sox during this season. Dave and Weymouth on the Red Sox pitching. Go ahead, Dave.
Yeah, it's a little off topic, but this kid, Jonathan Arauz, I hope I'm saying the name right, he's 22. Is there any chance that he's the second baseman of the future and they trade Jeter Downs to bring in pitching prospects?
Okay, not the question I was expecting. His subject line said Red Sox pitching. I thought that's where he was going to go. My answer is no. I don't think that Jonathan Arauz is the future second baseman. I think he's got a place in the organization, but I don't think the Red Sox are planning on trading Jeter Downs. Pitching is the topic tonight. Young pitching in the Red Sox and the way the organization has developed and handled pitching. Let me read to you this from Alex Speer's story in the Globe today. Okay? And the headline of which is, by the way, Tanner Houck leads Red Sox new wave of homegrown starters. But what is their upside? That is the story by Alex Speer in the Boston Globe. What is their upside? And to me, this gets to the crux of the matter. Speer writes, hard to believe, but true. Not long ago, the strength of the Red Sox farm system appeared to be its collection of young pitchers. An emerging wave suggested young and or homegrown starters for years to come. The team's future seemed to be taking shape thanks to, and remember these names, because you're going to remember them, Henry Owens, Matt Barnes, Brandon Workman, Alan Webster, Ruby De La Rosa, Anthony Renato, Eduardo Rodriguez, Brian Johnson, Trey Ball. Do you remember all those guys? Many of them were selected under Theo Epstein. Trey Ball, I think, was drafted, if I'm not mistaken, by Ben Cherington. Brian Johnson may have also been a Cherington guy, but I'm pretty sure Trey Ball was. Webster and De La Rosa were in the trade with the Dodgers. But do you remember all those names? Henry Owens? Do you remember the hype around Henry Owens? Anthony Renato? Do you remember that? I get back to Speer. Eventually, all except Rodriguez, Eduardo Rodriguez, whom the Red Sox got in a trade, fizzled as starters, Speer writes. Barnes and Workman became impact late-inning contributors. Owen, Webster, De La Rosa, Renato, Johnson, and Ball are now out of organized baseball. Now listen to this part. Ralph Truel, now in his 25th season in the Red Sox organization, with most of that time coming as a roving pitching coordinator, remembers what he and others in the Red Sox organization thought that group would become and acknowledges the disappointment in what it did not yield. Quote, I always felt like, why didn't we get more out of them, said Truel. It still sticks in my craw that we haven't had a homegrown starting pitcher. You'd like to see all homegrown talent in the big leagues. We've done a great job on our position players. I felt like it was a good class of pitchers that came through, but it should have been better. And you know what? He's right. Now, I don't know if there's an ace in that group. Maybe there isn't. But Henry Owens, Trey Ball, the Red Sox use Anthony Renato, the Red Sox use high picks on these guys. So it's possible they misjudged the talent and misevaluated. It's also possible that they effed up the development, which is what they did with Tanner Houck. Tanner Houck came out of the draft or into the draft as a sinker baller who had a chance to be a big league starter. The Red Sox have set back his development by what? A year? Maybe two? By trying to turn him into something he's not? The whole point of good development is taking what you have and then maximizing the strengths, not to turn them into something else. So now I wonder, is this the secret that Chaim Bloom brings from Tampa? Is Chaim Bloom capable, or is he more apt to look at the pitchers they have and say, what the hell did you do that for with Houck? Change him back to what he was. Let's get this kid back on the beam. Is that what they're doing down there? Is that what they're going to try to do with Nick Pivetta they got from the Phillies, or Connor Seabold that they got from the Phillies? Or does Jay Groom now have a better chance because Chaim Bloom understands that the development is just as important, if not more so, than the drafting? It's not just about identifying the talent. That's a big part of it. But the Red Sox use high picks on a lot of those pitchers that I rattled off on that list, and they didn't develop them. Why? Why? What happened down there? Now you have a member of the organization, Ralph Truel, saying we should have gotten more out of it. Why didn't they? And is that where the secret of Chaim Bloom lies? Is that where it rests? Does Chaim Bloom come here saying, no, you're developing them the wrong way. The talents are, you're developing them the wrong way. That is what I want to know. I want to go over Houck's performance in particular, pitch selection, what we saw, the pluses and the minuses, and there were minuses. As well as your phone calls, Jim and the Truck's on the line. Again, the phone lines are open, 617-779-0985. But we'll break down the outing and play you Ron Renicki's assessment and tell you why the Red Sox pitched him last night, by the way. No small detail. We'll get to that next.
This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show, The Baseball Reporters, on 98.5, The Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Like most of us, Keith Urban also has a bucket list. You may be surprised to learn what is and is not on his. Text Keith to 45911 to read and learn more about the central theme of Keith's bucket list. Get a link to the story sent right to your phone when you text Keith to 45911. Go inside country music at BackstageCountry.com.
Talking everything baseball.
So if you're a Red Sox fan, here's what you think.
It's the Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass on Boston's home for sports, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
That's why we have him pitching right now, is to see what he's like and see if he would fit in next year or what we think of him. So it's good to have him out there. And yes, if we can get him a couple more, that'd be great. So we'll see what happens, but what a great start for him. And you know, when you want to make an impression, he made an impression on all of us.
Small steps for the Red Sox at the moment. It's manager Ron Redicky, who frankly might not even be here next year. If he is, I'd be surprised by it.
He'll be Alex Cora's bench coach again.
Okay, so I'm okay with that. So when I say he's not here as manager, you know, if Renicki's the manager next year,
I'd be stunned.
Yeah, so would I. I'd be stunned. And look, I think it's unfair to judge him on this. I just don't know that he's the right fit for this team at this time. That's all. Ron Renicki's got more value to somebody as a bench coach than he does to be the babysitter of a Red Sox team. So let me start there. But he's obviously talking about Tanner Houck. And that's what this thing's about now. This is why the end of the season to me for the Red Sox was always going to be more interesting than the way it began, especially with the way it began, is that you had the chance to maybe see part of what their future is about, because this was clearly going to be and I know the Red Sox don't like this term, but bridge year or rebuilding year. They don't like that term over there. But that's what this was going to be no matter what. As it turned out, they got off to such a bad start that it became that right away. So as Jimmy Stewart, our producer, just said in my ear, after tonight, six more baseball reporter shows. Let's see, today's the 16th. So Friday the 25th will be our last program. Now, the Red Sox actually play through the 27th, which is Sunday.
That's correct.
So earlier today, our program director, Rick Radzik, and the assistant, Jim Louth, were out in the hallway saying, you know, in the past, haven't you done the show the day after the season ends just because, you know?
Sure, I have, yeah.
Yeah, that's customary. That the season ends and you do the show the next day, because that is what we here in the business call the post-mortem. In the case of the Red Sox, they died weeks ago. So the post-mortem for the 2020 Red Sox was on August 1st, as far as I'm concerned. So there will be no post-mortem on the Monday after the baseball season, the 28th. Again, the Red Sox fate was scripted a long, long time ago for this season. So you have a Friday show after tonight. You have Friday's show and then all of next week, depending on the Celtics schedule. It might even be less than that. I just wanted to share that with you. But as it relates to the pitching staff, Renicky there saying that the kid made an impression. Renicky also said a couple of other things last night that I do want to get to that I also think are important to recognize when we look at Tanner Houck's performance last night. But before we get to that, since Justin has been waiting patiently here on the phone, he's in Brighton. Justin, what do you got?
Yeah, hey, guys. So I liked what I saw from Houck last night. He clearly looked like he belonged, but it really doesn't change my view on the organization as a whole. I think it's going to take Heim Bloom at least 5 years to possibly develop a homegrown ace of the staff. I mean, you look at someone like Blake Snell down in Tampa, and it took him like 7 or 8 years to reach his peak. So I think what's going to happen is Bloom's going to end up butting heads with an impatient ownership group, and this thing's going to end poorly.
Yeah, so Justin, look, I think that is going to happen too. I think that's going to happen too. I think they're going to butt heads eventually, and it's inevitable. And the question is, are they going to be able to work through it or not? Now, I'm not waiting 5 years for an ace. The Red Sox can't wait 5 years for an ace. And it shouldn't take Bloom 5 years to completely rebuild the operation. You should start to see significant changes or upgrades in inside of 2 years, you'll see some significant improvement. You'll see, I think we've seen improvement already, but I mean substantial improvement. And I think you should start to get some real fruit from it 3 years. Now, what do they do in between? I don't know. They got to go get an ace, though. And this kid's not an ace. Let's not delude ourselves. But what I saw on the mound last night from Hauk was big league stuff. That's what I saw. His greatest asset is the movement. The ball really moves a lot, both on the sinker, the two-seam fastball, and a slider, which is bordering on ridiculous at times. Now, both of those pitches, typically better against right-handed batters. Okay, but with regard to the stuff, and I'll give you a breakdown here in a minute of exactly what he threw last night, down to the very detail. In fact, let's do that now. Overall, fastballs, and that accounts for both two-seam and four-seam. Okay, sinkers or traditional fastballs that you might throw, four-seamer up in the zone to get a strikeout. He threw those 58% of the time. Slider, 35% of the time. And what's listed here is a changeup, 7% of the time, but that's really more of a split-fingered fastball. Okay, it's that last one you got to focus on, the 7%, the split, or the change. What he needs to get left-handed batters out, because if he doesn't develop a third pitch or a way to effectively attack lefties with his slider, then he may never be anything more than just a end-of-the-rotation guy or even a bullpen guy. But if that other thing happens, his ceiling, I think, is a number two starter. Ceiling. More likely, his ceiling is a number three, but I'm trying to be positive or optimistic for a night. He's not an ace. I doubt that he can be a number two, but if he can get his act together and develop properly, he could be a middle-of-the-rotation guy. That's my opinion. Now, Renicki was asked a couple of things, and if you don't want to believe me on the stuff, here's Ron Renicki. Jimmy, this is Renicki number two, talking about the stuff that Hauk brought to the mound last night.
Well, he's got great movement on his fastball. That's the biggest thing. He's got a sinker. It runs when it's up some. He has a four-seamer. He's come up with a cutter. And the slider is really good. You saw to the right-handers, he threw a lot of great sliders down in the way that they have trouble picking up. So good mix of pitches, and Vasky did a real nice job with him.
Okay, so look, this is not I'm not trying to talk down to you or reinvent the wheel here, but pitching is pretty simple when you break it down. The ball moves left and the ball moves right. Okay, now there's up and down too, but just I'm keeping it simple for you. So what Hauk is throwing right now to right-handed batters is a nasty sinker that moves in and then a slider that really tails away. So if you're a right-handed batter and you get in the box against Hauk, you have to fear two things. One, him busting me inside with that sinker, or two, him throwing that slider away and then I'm fishing. So you have to protect both sides of the plate. Hauk doesn't have the same thing against a left-handed batter. So he has to develop that, and he's had trouble with lefties in the minor leagues as a result. So he's toyed with some things to try to get lefties out more consistently, and there's lots of ways to do that. You don't have to just do it by running the ball away from lefties. Sometimes you can bury it in on their hands. You can do it that way too. But he's now toying with a split-fingered fastball. We'll see if that works. I'm not sure it can. But as it pertains to the lineup, you think it's a coincidence that the Red Sox pitched him against the Marlins last night? Does anyone really think that that is even close to a coincidence? The Marlins don't have a great offense. More importantly, they have been especially vulnerable to right-handed pitching. Okay, so it feels like a right-handed heavy lineup. They're in the bottom 10 in the league in OPS against right-handed pitching. Renicki, to his credit, was very open about this. So, Jimmy, this is Renicki number three on why the Red Sox pitched Hauk last night.
You know, if we would have had him in against Tampa, I'm sure they would have loaded up and, you know, whatever, 7, 8, 9 lefties, and it makes it a little tougher for him. But I thought this was a good matchup for him with the more right-handers in there. And then we'll see. We'll see how he continues to progress. And if he continues to get out lefties, I mean, this guy should be a really good pitcher.
Okay, so again, really good to me is a little excessive. I think he could be a pretty decent big league starter.
So he sounds like he's Justin Masterson.
Okay, so that's actually a pretty good analogy, Jimmy. Yeah, that's a good analogy. Justin Masterson, remember him, right? So a lot of Red Sox fans may remember him. Masterson is a similar kind of guy. Masterson ended up being a, what, serviceable reliever and had some function as a starter but had a lot of trouble with lefties. That's a great comparison, Jimmy. Great comparison. So the question then becomes, can they develop him properly? Can he learn a third pitch or can he find a way to get lefties out without that third pitch? And even if he's not a great starter, does he get good enough to the point where you can include him in a package and trade him for something else? So that's a variable here, too, with Tanner Houck. 617-779-0985. There are other pitchers in the Red Sox organization that they would be logical to bring up here down the stretch. One of them, however, we're not going to see until at least next week. I'll explain why after Murray gets you caught up on headlines.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone.
This is Boston's most listened to nightly baseball show. The Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass on 98.5 The Sports Hub.
In case you missed it, MLB has been discussing recently, has now approved plans for the postseason. We'll get to that a little bit later in the show. They'll be in a bubble for the postseason, MLB will. But there are some particulars as it pertains to the National League, especially, that should really open your eyes as to how much of an opportunity the Red Sox blew this year. But the focus for the majority of the show tonight has been on the Red Sox young pitching, the discussion inspired by Tanner Houck's performance last night against the Miami Marlins. Houck goes 5 innings, 7 strikeouts, 3 walks. I think he threw 89 pitches, might have been 86, somewhere in that area. 49 strikes. I'm going to say 86 pitches, 49 strikes, something like that. And I'll tell you that overall, I liked what I saw from Houck. There's big league stuff there. Not like some of these hacks the Red Sox have sent out to the mound here during, you know, during the pandemic and during this hellish season, entirely forgettable season. You know when this is all over, Murray? To me, you know what this is going to be to me? The season that never existed. I'm going to have no recollection of anything that happened during this this 2020 season because it's been complete in a complete vacuum.
Well, same. And a lot of that probably has to do with, you know, stopping watching the games, right? I mean, I paid attention and watched the first few weeks. Then I realized what this team was and how, you know, poor they were going to play and that they were in the toilet. And then I stopped. I'm sure most people have too.
Yeah, I mean, why would you? Why would you invest in this, especially with everything else going on? The Celtics are in the Eastern Conference Finals. The Bruins were in the playoffs. The Patriots have started.
After that, it was like, oh, the hell.
Forget it. Kentucky Derby was last 2 weeks ago, or whatever it was. The U.S. Open Golf is this week. The Masters is cut. Like, there's a million things going on now because of the change in schedules. The Red Sox are entirely irrelevant, completely irrelevant. But I do think that last night was one of the few things that you could focus on and actually talk about the team in real time. And that is a young pitcher who was a first-round pick, got to the mound, performed reasonably well. And I was pleasantly surprised. Houck's stuff is pretty good. It's not great. It's not grade A. It's not an ace stuff. But he's got tremendous movement. You can see where the problem is, though, with Houck. And I said that 86 pitches, 49 strikes. He's got to command the ball better. It's got to be better control and command there. He can't put guys on base. So there's strikeout stuff there, which is good. The movement is off the charts. I mean, really, really good. And it seems like he's got poise on the mound, which is good, although you can never tell in a situation like this. You won't know that really until later. But he got in a jam in the fourth inning, got out of it, powered his way out of that, which was good to see. But again, the big thing to me is the stuff. When you look at a guy, you say, is that big league stuff? Does this guy have anything? Jimmy, you remember the lefty they had that they traded to the Tampa Bay Rays?
Jordan Beeks.
Jalen Beeks.
Jalen Beeks.
Okay, the first time I saw him pitch, I said, this kid's got nothing. He's got nothing. He's ordinary. Very, very, very ordinary. I didn't feel that way about Tanner Houck. So again, I'm not telling you he's an ace, because he's not. But if they develop him properly and he refines, he's got big league stuff. There's stuff there that can play in the big leagues. Charlie's in Marlboro. Go ahead, Charlie.
Oh, hey, how are you doing? So, a couple things. It's good to see Houck have a good day pitching. Good to have a young guy up there that's inexpensive. Just funny thing that, you know, the guy, I think Brusnay Gratterall from the Dodgers that they supposed to get from the Twins. I guess he threw the most pitches over 100 this year, so could have used him in the bullpen. But
okay, so go ahead.
I was just saying that I hope the pitch, Red Sox go after a bunch of some of these guys that coming off injury, kind of high end guys like a Kluber, maybe a Paxton, Jonathan Gray. Go after two or three guys to fill out some of their rotation for next year.
So Charlie, look, I think in the short term that's what you're going to get. I don't think they're going to go out and sign a big name pitcher. We talked about Trevor Bauer the other day. I don't think you're going to invest in a guy like him. Why would you do that? But if you want to tell me that the Red Sox are going to go out there on some reclamation projects and that they'll take a shot on, you mentioned Kluber. I think there's an option on Kluber's contract, so I'm not sure he'll hit the market. Maybe he will, but the general idea, the guys that are coming back from injury or coming off of bad years that are better pitchers than they've shown that you might be able to get on the relative cheap for a short deal, sure. Yeah, something that can improve your staff and make you competitive in the short term. And by competitive, I don't mean 95 wins. I mean that maybe makes you a playoff contender and keeps you on the cusp there getting into the postseason, especially if they adhere to an expanded playoff format going forward. I'm not sure baseball is going to do that, but let's see how that shakes out. If that happens, that plays to your advantage. The caller mentioned Brusdar Graterol, and I'll just touch on this because he brought it up. Graterol was the pitcher the Red Sox were going to get from the Dodgers in the Mookie Betts deal, and they backed out. So far this season, in 18 appearances, which includes one start, but this guy's a reliever. Graterol has pitched 17 and two-thirds. He has struck out 11 and walked only two. So the two walks, good sign. This guy's got strikeout power, but I wouldn't say the numbers jump off the page at you. He's got a 3.06 ERA, hasn't allowed a home run. I mean, there's stuff there, but there was also health concerns about Graterol. So certainly over the long term, we'll keep an eye there and see whether or not the Red Sox made the right move there by adding Jeter Downs and Connor Wong to that deal, along with Verdugo, and taking Graterol out of it. So, but the development of pitching is the number one thing. And I said before the break that the Red Sox should be bringing up more guys like Tanner Houck, one of whom is Nick Pivetta, whom they acquired from the Phillies in the trade for Brandon Workman and Heath Hembree. And they also got Connor Siebold in that deal, who's more of a prospect. Pivetta has pitched in the big leagues. Pivetta won't be here until next week, and I'll tell you why in a minute. Tim is in Nashua. Go ahead, Tim.
Tony, the younger players in the minor leagues, could this be some of the end of their careers? I mean, what is Major League Baseball doing to help some of these players in their development?
Well, look, Tim, you raise a good point. I mean, a lot of these guys, yes, they might not come back. No two ways about it. And we haven't spent a lot of time on this one, but the ones that have value, organizations have had an extended camp. Obviously, they were allowed to expand rosters and keep them in their, minor league camp, for lack of a better word. The Red Sox had a scrimmage today, I think, down in Pawtucket, where their group is playing. And what's his name? Pivetta was on the mound there, and I saw that he struck out Jaron Duran at one point. So there are guys playing. The teams are trying to continue the development of those players. But lower-level guys, they miss a year. But that's not a problem that's exclusive to the Red Sox. That is something that's happening to everybody. So now it might hurt a team like the Red Sox more because they need to get more out of some of those lower-level guys now and see if they have any talent down there than other organizations might, just because of the absolute absence of talent at the big league level. The Red Sox are really short on players. So, and pitchers more than anything else. I shouldn't say players. But there's no question it's going to hurt a lot of those guys. Back to Nick Pivetta, who I saw today will not pitch until next week. And here is why. And Jimmy Stewart, I'd love your opinion as to whether you think this is the right thing. Nick Pivetta needed a certain number of days to qualify for he needed a certain number of days this season to qualify for 3 years of service. And if that were the case, he'd be eligible for free agency at the end of 2023. Okay? He needed a certain number of days this year to reach 3 years in the big leagues. And that would have made him eligible for free agency at the end of 2023. The Red Sox know this, and I think now he's 9 days away. So the point is, the Red Sox have, what the hell is it, tonight? Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 5 and 6 is 11 games left, 12 days of the season. If the Red Sox bring him up before the weekend, the end of the weekend, he would be a free agent at the end of 2023. by waiting until next week, the Red Sox put that off until the end of 2024. They potentially keep Pivetta for an entire extra season just by waiting a few more days to bring him up and pitch now. Do you like it or not?
I don't like it, and I find it funny that he's being treated like Theo Epstein treated Chris Bryant all those years ago when he held him out for a month so he could save an extra year of service time.
Okay, it's exactly what the Cubs did with Chris Bryant, and teams do this routinely. And it's kind of a dick move, for lack of a better description. It is kind of a dick move, but I think they're doing the right thing. Is it
wrong? For this kid?
Is it wrong for me to say that?
No.
By screwing this kid?
That's just business.
A former fourth-round draft pick who you got for two bullpen arms who sucked?
So I'll tell you, though, you know what? I think the Red Sox have to do it this way right now. They have nothing. They have nothing. So if this means they get to... What if the guy can pitch? And they pitched him here. Let's say they pitched him tonight. And as a result, he's eligible for free agency at the end of 2023. Don't you think we'll look at that and go, what the hell were they doing back then?
Yeah.
They had a season that they're flushing down the toilet. They could have banked it and held them on. You know, what they can do if they're smart is pitch him on Tuesday of next week and then pitch him Sunday. So he still gets two starts, but that they do it next week so he doesn't get the service time.
I suppose it can only get better for him. In his 92 major league games, he's got a 5.5 ERA.
I know, that's the thing. It's probably not even going to matter, really, right? Because the guy sucks or has sucked, so who knows? But if they are to tap into him, I actually don't mind them doing it this way. And remember, this is how the Tampa Bay Rays operate. The Red Sox historically have not necessarily done it this way with players. They sort of look at it and say, no, we're going to bring Jackie Bradley up to start the year. You remember that year?
Yeah, because they needed the outfield help, and he had a few key at-bats in Yankee Stadium that weekend.
Right, and the point being is that winning the games meant something to them. Tampa Bay didn't operate that way, and the Red Sox right now are more like Tampa Bay.
Did Tampa do that with Evan Longoria?
I think they did, Jimmy. They did it with David Price, too, I think. I think Tampa Bay did it routinely. It's a small market move. Dare I say that? That's really the way to describe it. It's a small market move, which is why it was so controversial when Theo did it with the Cubs, because the Cubs are not a small market team. And they did. They porked Bryant, but they were right to do so. And it's not like they were the first team ever to do that. But it was
unless he leaves.
It's a small market kind of move.
This is the Baseball Reporters with Tony Mass on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. It's going to be a busy year for country superstar Jason Aldean. He's extended his Highway Desperado tour and is teaming up with Kid Rock for Rock the Country tour dates. We've ranked our top five Jason Aldean music videos. Text Jason to 45911 to see if your favorite made the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Jason to 45911 and we'll send the link straight to your phone. BackstageCountry.com, your online home for all things country music. Picking five of Carrie Underwood's best music videos was no easy task, but after some debate, we landed on five we believe rise to the top. Did Carrie's 2014 hit Something in the Water make our top five? Find out when you text Carrie to 45911 and scroll through the list on BackstageCountry.com. Text Carrie to 45911 to get your eyes on our favorite Carrie Underwood music videos.